Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about books we'd like to recommend.
And in this episode, we're talking about several different books. One of our, I guess, almost secret programs that we host for library staff every year is something that we call the Secret Reader Program, which is where, rather than doing a Secret Santa, we have people sign up for it, and they can opt in to have books that are recommended that are kind of according to their taste that they might not have discovered otherwise. We keep it where we select books for each other that are library books, so we're not actually spending any money.
Yes, which is exciting. And we are getting together some of our participants this year to talk about one of the books that was recommended. We are overachievers. We usually recommend more than one to our Secret Santees, but we're getting a few people in, and hopefully they can share some thoughts, good or bad, about the books that they read.
And this covers an aspect of librarianship that we don't really get a chance to talk about very often.
Mm-hmm.
All of us do try to practice what's called reader's advisory, where we select books for people based on their reading tastes with the hope that it will be their next favorite author or next favorite series that we're able to get them into.
And if you're not being too mean, you do try to pick books you think people would enjoy. We do occasionally have someone who pranks us a little bit by giving us books that maybe we are not super interested in, but it's always nice to stretch our boundaries.
And for our listeners out there, if you find that you're having trouble figuring out what you should read next, be sure to ask one of us, because we practice this skill annually.
There we go.
And Sabrina is joining us to talk about The Night Diary. How about you tell us a little bit about that book?
Absolutely. So I loved this book. It's a historical fiction found in the juvenile section. It is called The Night Diary by Vera. I'm going to get this wrong, but I'm going to try. Hiranandari? Something like that. It is about the partition of India in 1947. It is written in the form of letters. So it's literally kind of like a diary letter format. It is focused around Nisha. She is a 12-year-old twin, from what I understand. She doesn't talk very much, but she likes to express herself in the letters that she writes her mother, who has passed away.
Okay.
So she is writing about the partition of India and how they have to move from what is becoming Pakistan to India because her father is Hindu. But what is really unique about Nisha is that she's half Hindu, half Muslim. So she herself doesn't understand why this is even happening. You know, if she can be a culmination of two different cultures, why can't, you know, the country stay together? So it's very fascinating. It's heartbreaking. It's loving. It's so much. It's also filled with a lot of really good food references. Like, she spends a lot of time cooking. That's like her favorite thing. But it was just fascinating. Like, her journey as a refugee trying to get to India to where it was safe for her.
So who was the person that recommended books for you?
It was Chasley, the children's librarian.
And why do you think she picked this one in particular?
For me, I think she picked it because I love historical fiction, and I think she wanted to get me out of the 1800s.
Fair.
I think that's what happened here. And it was a great trip. I really enjoyed it. I read this book over lunch. Like, it's a pretty easy read. And then I thought about it for quite a while. It kind of stayed with me, which is the best kind. So.
And I know it's a book from our children's collection. Do you think that other adult readers would find it relatable?
I actually did. So even though it's written from like a juvenile perspective of like probably middle schoolish age, intermediate, I thought it was great. I followed it. It was still enough adultish because of the content. Like, there are some gruesome parts in it, but it's written from a child's perspective. So maybe myself as an adult was like, oh God, like I feel this. And maybe as a child, you wouldn't pick up on those nuances as much.
Right.
But I think I would recommend it to all ages. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're here with Jamie to talk about Afterland by Lauren Bukes. Who recommended this one to you?
Lisa Laredo was my secret reading Santa. And this book is sci-fi. It's post-dystopian. I'm not saying that right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The world has taken a turn for the worse. Very strange for the days we're in, because kind of similar. A pandemic has spread through the entire world.
Oh, joy.
Oh, joy. Yeah, it's great stuff. But this particular pandemic in the book affects only males and gives them this terrible virus that eventually gives them cancer. So almost every man on Earth has died a horrible death. I know, right? And so then there are a few remaining men and boys, and they become super valuable. They're somehow resistant to this strain. So the government has to round them all up and figure out what's the deal so that we can continue the human race.
Yeah.
So the book follows a mother and her son, who I think is like 11 or 12, who are on the run through most of the book from not only the government, but also her evil sister, who is trying to catch them and sell him or on the black market. So a lot of adventure, a lot of science, a lot of action.
So you're not normally a sci-fi action adventure type. Did you enjoy this book? What did you think about it?
I have to say, not so much.
Okay.
I appreciated it for what it is. It was super plot driven. So, you know, it kind of was a page turner, but I kind of found myself like, I don't really care what happens to these people. And kind of a weird thing, because the mom was, you know, looking out for her son, number one, like, I get that. But also, if we don't figure this stuff out scientifically, the human race is really going to go extinct in one generation. So I just wasn't sure whose side I was on.
Yeah.
You know, the whole entire time I knew whose side I wasn't on, which was the evil sister. But so I wasn't like racing to get to the end to figure it all out and have a big happy ending. But that said, it is pretty well written. I mean, it's well written. It's interesting, right? Except for it's a lot kind of like other books. I like books that are super unique, like no one ever thought of that. Well, we've thought of this before, like in writing. So it wasn't my favorite. I'd probably give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Maybe a 6.5. But it definitely has a reading base. She's a very popular author, and I'm glad it was recommended to me because I got to try something different. But yeah, somewhere between a 6.5 and a 7.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Katie is joining us to talk about a book that was selected for her.
Yes.
I can give you the spoiler and say that I was the one that picked out books for her.
It was
challenging because she reads so much current stuff that I was trying to pick something that was semi-recent. But
I'm
also
like a shark with the new books. I just circle.
But also something that she hadn't already tried to read.
Yes. And it was actually really interesting. The one that I am going to be talking about today is a book of short stories by Ted Chiang called Exhalations. And this is actually, he wrote The Story of Your Life, which got turned into the hit sci-fi movie Arrival. And I had already read that one, and I had already read the title short story, Exhalation. All of his books are very like atmospheric sci-fi that talk a lot about science. The science isn't really the main part of it. It's more how that science is used as a framework to talk about the human experience, desires, things like that. The first book in the series is set in Baghdad in, oh gosh, like the 1500s. It's far back. So it's a surprising setting, I think, for a lot of people, because you always assume sci-fi needs to be the future. But a lot of his have to do with human history, or just humanoid history, and kind of how mankind and life relates to just any life. How there's just kind of this propelling notion that pushes us forward no matter who we are, when we're from. So it's really interesting, especially if you're not a huge sci-fi person. This is a great foray into science fiction because it gives you a chance to experience those kind of sci-fi-y topics, but you're really just talking about the human condition.
Okay. Why do you think this book was chosen for you?
Because I like science fiction. And he is a very popular author, and I think this specific book was a pretty popular one last year. I'm happy it was, because I kept passing up and being like, oh, I need to read that eventually. So I got my chance.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And Cherie is joining us to talk about the book Hinch, which was recommended to her by Katie. Is that right?
Yes, Katie gave me my Secret Santa gifts this year.
And I think she gave herself away, too, because she also gave you Orconomics, which was reviewed previously on the podcast.
She did, yes.
So how about you tell us a little bit about Hinch and why you think it was picked out for you?
Well, Hinch is a book by Natalie Zena Walshots, and it features your protagonist, Anna Tromodloff. Anna's a professional hench for hire. Supervillains hire her to do office work and data analysis. Then one day, her boss takes her in the field, and she's injured by a superhero who crashes in to save the day. So the book is really looking at the real cost in dollars and lives of superheroes in a society that screens kids in adolescence and pulls them into a training program that reads like a superhero industrial complex. And the book kind of reminded me of Captain America Civil War, and it kind of reminded me of Ender's Game.
Okay.
So it's a first-person story. It's a look into one woman's life in this alternate reality, and she faces annoyances, both major, like massive injury by a superhero, minor, like pronouncing her name correctly, and mundane, like paying your bills after a layoff, because even supervillain sidekicks get laid off. And so Anna's an anti-hero at best, but she's somebody that you can't help but root for at the same time. I think Katie picked this for me because I like sarcasm and satire, and I like superheroes. So I think that she saw this review and said, this book is right up Cherie's alley.
So are the superheroes kind of portrayed as villains in this story because you're rooting for an anti-hero?
A little bit. It's more like everybody in this story is gray.
Okay.
And the part for superheroes, and it reminded me a little bit, I haven't watched this series, but The Boys on Amazon.
I was kind of wondering about that too, but maybe a lighter
A little bit lighter-ish. The superheroes are supposed to be super and supposed to be the good guys and everything. But when Anna is injured by a superhero, the police officers flat out deny it. Oh, you must have been mistaken. That must have been the villain who injured you, Ms. Innocent Bystander, who, by the way, she was a hench person, not really an innocent bystander. So that really annoyed Anna, who, again, data nerd. Analytics is her thing. So she sits down, and while she's recovering from massive injury, and she never really walks without a cane again, she gets a cane. She gets a supervillain cane. Mm-hmm. She just has a lot of time on her hands to start calculating what in terms of lives has it cost for this superhero to come smashing in and save this kid's finger. How many people's lives were lost because of that?
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you so much for bringing us a spin on the superhero stories.
The anti-superhero.
Yes. And Lisa is here to review a book that was selected for her by Roop. The book that she's reviewing today is First Grave on the Right, and I do not remember the author name, but tell us a little bit about it.
It's by Dorinda Jones, and actually it's a series. There's about 13 of them, I believe. And this book is actually, I was pretty surprised. I loved it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. So there's the character, her name is Charlotte Davidson, but she goes by Charlie Davidson.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and she's a part-time private investigator and part-time Grim Reaper. So the Grim Reaper part is she basically can see dead people, and she allows them to cross through her to get to the other side if they want to.
Okay.
So in this book, there's three, and she can go home, and real quick, inside her home, there's a little old Chinese man she calls Mr. Chow, and all he does is stare at the corner, and that's it. So she'll walk in, hey, Mr. Chow, how's it going? Like, it doesn't bother her, you know. So anyway, so she meets these three lawyers that were killed. They were murdered, and they want to find out why, because, you know, they left their families. And so she's helping them, and she has another, I guess you could say, a ghost. He's 13 years old, and he's a gangbanger. And he kind of works for her. He goes and does investigations for her. And, you know, she's like, that's my little homie. So, you know, it's really cool. But since she was born, there was this like entity that she saw, because her mom died giving birth to her. So there was this entity that was always around her growing up whenever she would get in trouble. One, a man had lured her into an abandoned building, and well, who knows what he was going to do, but that entity came and helped her. And so she's always wondered. So when she was 15, her and her sister were out doing a video about the slums of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And she saw a man beating a young kid. So she goes and she throws a brick at the window, and, you know, so the man comes chasing after them. Well, she ends up meeting the guy, and, you know, she was like, let us help you. He was about 18 years old. He was all beat up. And so he was like, just leave me alone, leave me alone. So finally they left. She went back to check on him, but they had already moved out. So anyways, so this guy turns out to be part of what the entity is. You know, he's always been close to her because she's pretty much the portal to heaven.
Okay.
And he ends up being the portal out of hell.
Interesting. Okay.
So they have this bond. His name is Reyes. So he comes to her in her dreams, but then she realizes, oh, he's a real person because he's in prison for killing his dad, or his so-called dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and there's some funny parts in there. And then, there, of course, there's the love part. And, you know, it was such a good book. And I'm already on book four.
That was going to be my follow-up question, was if it was good enough to dive into the series.
Yeah. So I'm on book four. I'm excited to finish the number 13. So.
Why do you think this book was picked for you?
Well, one, I guess it was a romance. Even though it's more like paranormal, I guess, and I don't really read paranormal, but I'm glad she picked this for me because it was really entertaining, obviously, if I'm on book four. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for bringing us a good read.
All right.
And we're here with Leslie to talk about her book that was recommended to her. Who was your Secret Santa?
So our tween librarian, Lou Wright, was the person that selected three different books for me, and I'm going to talk about one of them. Interestingly enough, for us, she and I have almost polar opposite reading tastes.
Yes.
So I'm very into horror and out there literary fiction. I tend to like things that have like a what the heck factor to them that throw a lot of readers for a loop. I find it very enjoyable. Lou tends to read romance.
Yeah.
In fact, that's probably one of her favorite things. I think she also reads a lot of juvenile fiction.
Yes, because of her status as tween librarian.
Yes, yes. And she's very good at recommending juvenile fiction, even for adults.
But she actually went a little out of her comfort zone, I think, with the books that she chose for you. So which one are you talking about today?
So I'm going to talk about the book called Bunny by Mona Awad. And honestly, I was really glad this one was selected for me because if I looked at it from the cover, it looks kind of chick-litty. Like, it's a black cover with a bright pink bunny on the top, on the front.
Called Bunny.
Called Bunny. And I was like, what? But it is completely not what the cover portrays. It is, bunnies are very prominent in the book, but not in the way that you would expect. It is written from the perspective of a girl whose name I cannot remember because her best friend calls her Smacky throughout the entire book. So I'm just going to refer to her as Smacky. Anyway, she is part of a prestigious creative writing or MFA program at an Ivy League school. And she is the outsider. She's the one that, you know, grew up in poverty. And she's had a lot of wants and a lot of things. A lot of her needs were not able to be met. Unfortunately, the four people, other people in her cohort, are all super well-to-do, super snobby, and kind of ridiculously girlish. In fact, they're all very cliquish, cling to each other, and call each other Bunny. So much so that it's really hard to keep the different characters straight, because they all, what do you want to do today, Bunny? Oh, I don't know, Bunny. How about you, Bunny? It gets a little confusing at some point.
Does it start the novel off that way, being kind of difficult to tell them apart?
Kind of. Now, fortunately, Smacky has categorized each person according to their dress tastes. So they have, like, real names, which you basically forget. And then they have her fake names that she gives each one. So one of the memorable ones was called the Duchess. And she would always come in with glass that she would etch what she called proems. It was poetry on top of the glass using this special, like, sharpened diamond.
Oh, wow.
So the characters are all each outrageous, but it's almost in a way to try to cling to some sense of self, because otherwise they seem like this collective bunny.
Okay.
Anyway, Smacky gets invited to the inner circle, and a bunch of horrific things happen whenever she starts to discover what they call the work actually is. And I don't really want to give it away because it is so out there and trippy, but it takes on a very horror tone to it. There is murder. There's a whole lot of bloodshed midway through the book. And a lot of people did not see that coming. So whenever I looked at the reviews on Amazon or Goodreads, at least 50% of the reviewers were like, I do not understand what the heck was happening. And I kind of look at the entire thing as like a giant metaphor for the creative process and trying to find your own individual voice and make sure that it's unique to yourself.
Okay.
I'm going to leave it at that, though, because I don't want to give away any spoilers.
Definitely. Don't be fooled by the cover.
Yes. But I loved that it was a wonderful combination of literary with some kind of sparse horror elements. I think it was one of the best horror novels recommended in 2019, I think.
Okay.
But I don't even consider it really horror. It wasn't that scary. It was just gruesome.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're here with Rachel, who is going to talk about one of her books that she got from
Amber. Got me this book. It's called The Alienist by Caleb Carr. It's an older book. I think it was published in 1995. I have not read it, though. I love historical fiction, which it is, and so it was very fascinating from that standpoint. It's written in the time of the late 1800s in New York City, when Teddy Roosevelt became the police commissioner for the city of New York, and it's about a serial killer in New York that was taking out boy prostitutes and carving them up quite unnicely and leaving them places. And most people on the police force at that time felt that that population of individuals was expendable, so they weren't going to spend their time trying to figure out what was going on. But Teddy Roosevelt wanted to figure it out, so he got together a group of individuals to help solve those crimes, one of which was an alienist, which is actually the original term for psychiatrist, psychologist, one of those two. I get them mixed up. Sorry. And so he started, this psychologist, psychiatrist, started to create a criminal profile on this killer, similar to what we do now, but this is sort of the dawn of that technology. And he had with him a police reporter from the New York Times or something like that to help him research. And then he had two detectives from the police force that also were very progressive and modern in their thought processes at the time in how they researched crimes. So they started using fingerprinting and ballistics and those sorts of things, which was very new for the time. And a lot of people thought it was magic and hokey pokey, but it seems very real to us now. And then there was a lady who was the secretary for the police commissioner, Teddy Roosevelt. So what I loved about the book is the historical part of it. I learned a lot about the dawn of policing as we know it today, mm-hmm. as far as the techniques that they use. What I did not like about it, it was pretty gory. I don't tend to be a gory person, and it was very descriptive in the way that the young boys were disposed of. I sort of didn't like. But what was fascinating most of all to me, so I'm a very empathetic person. I feel the feelings of my characters. I connect to them on a very deep level in a story. And as they were creating the profile on this serial killer and learning about his history and sort of what how he developed into what he was, there were points in time where I found myself commiserating with the serial killer and understanding, like, oh, that's why. Mm-hmm. There were several points where I had to stop myself and go, no, no, that's still not okay to cut people up and leave them dead. Oh my gosh, right? So that, to me, is the sign of a really good author mm-hmm. when they can get you to do stuff like that. So I enjoyed the book from that standpoint. I thought it was very well written, and it historically was really fascinating.
Okay.
And Chasley is here to review a book called With Every Breath by Elizabeth Camden. Is that right?
That's right.
Go ahead and tell us a little bit about the book and then who selected it for you and why you think it was picked out for you.
So I put off reading this book because it's inspirational fiction and I like to be inspired. I finally started it on a Saturday and read the whole thing in one sitting. It's set at the end of the 19th century and it's about a tuberculosis doctor and this woman he knew in school who he hires, and they have this great competitive teasing relationship that borders on rudeness, which I enjoy. And they're both super smart. Also, I identify with that. But there's also this mystery of who's trying to sabotage the doctor's career, and everything about tuberculosis is like this big medical mystery too. And so all of that is just fascinating, and maybe even more so now than it would have been a year ago. I loved the whole thing. Sabrina was the one who recommended it to me, and I think that she did because we had been talking about how we love to read books about like plagues and things like that, but also just because she just genuinely really loved the book and devoured it in one sitting just like I did. I think she suggested it to me mostly just because it was a fantastic book.
It's kind of interesting that you were able to find a book outside of a genre that you'd usually read that was still that.
Yeah, like the things that I normally like expect not to like about inspirational fiction were not like the primary like drivers of the story. It was very much about like the doctor and his relationship with the woman and with tuberculosis. And so it read more like a historical fiction, which I do enjoy.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing.
And that was our last interview.
As you can see, some of them were hits and some of them were near misses. But for the most part, I think people are really happy when they get book recommendations like that mm-hmm. because it's a way to discover books that you may not find on your own.
Yes, and stretch your literary muscles a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of our favorite things to do is recommend books for people. So mm-hmm. like we said at the beginning of the episode, if you are struggling to find your next read, please let a librarian know. We'd be way too happy to give you an yep. armful of recommendations.
It'll probably be a little too aggressive, but yes. in a nice way.
Yes. And in fact, this program has been so popular that we've decided to extend it so it's a year-long thing where every quarter we pick out a new genre.
Yes.
And we try to pick books from within that genre for other people that we hope that they will enjoy as a way to expand our literary horizons.
Yes, and that way we're not paying too much attention to one genre, because if you didn't notice, there are a few under or unrepresented genres that were reviewed, so hopefully we can fix that problem.
Exactly. So stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye!